Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Mortal Kombat! Hey everybody, how's it going? You're listening to the Command Zone. We are on episode 70. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
Get over here! I mean, how's it?
How's it?
It's Josh Lee-Kwai.
Josh fires a hook into your chest and yanks you over.
Fatality.
No, you have to go shaka, bro. Fatality.
Shaka, bro. Fatality.
How's it going, everybody? We are going to try out a new topic today, or a new kind of topic. We are actually going to be talking about current events
in the world of Magic the Gathering.
And at the end step, we're going to do something that's a current-ish event not in the world of Magic the Gathering.
It's just currently current.
Current, yeah.
In fire all currents.
Yeah. All currencies. We decided to do this after... Well, it was pretty much after the announcement this week. You'll be hearing it. It'll be last week by the time you hear this, of Mark Rosewater on this Tumblr talking about Battle for Zendikar. And it got everyone in a tizzy, and we were like, you know what? We could spend a little time discussing this stuff.
There was just so much that happened this week, because not only that, there's the Commander 2015 stuff.
Yeah.
There's been some other things recently that aren't like didn't happen last week, but have happened in the last couple of weeks. And it's a fun opportunity for us to talk about some stuff. Some of it's Commander EDH related, but not all of it will be.
Mm-hmm. It's all Magic related, yes, though, which I think is really pertinent. And it's all about the community too as well, because that's the reason that these topics are debated and talked about, is because everyone is very passionate about the game. So I think it's pretty important to keep up with what's current. Even if you're a casual Magic the Gathering player, it's nice. It's cool to hear this stuff. It's cool to just sort of, I don't know, have an opinion, I guess. But don't have too, I mean... Don't have too many opinions, guys.
Well, it's a game we're passionate about. We spend a lot of time. We spend a lot of money, you know. So, of course, we're going to be thinking about it when we're not playing it. And this is just some fun things to talk about and discuss. So,
yeah, true.
You want to start with the Battle for Zendikar thing?
Yeah. So, last week on Morrow's blog on Tumblr, he basically was like, I've been asked a ton of questions about this. So if you guys don't know, normally they do Battle for Zendikar spoiler stuff at Comic-Con. But this year, Comic-Con was early, so they had nothing to talk about. Relating to the set, really, except show some art and talk about what's going to happen, but they didn't spoil any cards or anything. Specifically, people are wondering about full art lands and whether or not they're going to be the fetch lands again.
The Zendikar fetches.
The Zendikar fetches, like Scalding Tarn. Yeah. I don't know what the other ones are, actually, because I don't own any.
Yeah, I have a couple, but whatever. They're really expensive right now, too.
And yeah, they just shot back up in price.
Yeah, they were expensive before, and then once this announcement got made, because spoiler alert, the Zendikar fetches are not going to be in Battle for Zendikar, is one of the things that Morrow put in his blog. So then those prices have shot up.
Yeah, and fetch lands, for those that don't know, they just got there's two cycles of fetch lands. There's allied colored fetch lands, so the colors that are next to each other, blue and white, green and red. And there's also enemy colored fetch lands, which are the ones that we talk about, you know, that aren't green and
like blue and red.
Yeah.
If you listen to our Color World series,
all that stuff.
Yeah.
So they reprinted those last year in Khanza Tarkir, and now they're like $10 to $15.
The allied colors.
Yeah,
ones.
Because those were $40, $50. And
Polluted Delta was like $50. It was crazy. Yeah.
It made entry into Modern much more accessible for a lot of people, and people were like, oh my gosh, they're going to do it again in Zendikar. That's when the original fetches were printed for the enemy-colored pairs, and they weren't. Yeah,
I mean, they're saying they're not.
They're saying they're not going to be.
I mean, they're not going to be.
Yeah,
he's not head faking anybody here.
There's going to be a new cycle of rare lands, but people got very upset.
Ton of salt.
Oh, and the fetch lands, if you guys don't know what they do, they grab a plains or a swamp, so you can get an original dual land, or you can get a shock land, or just a regular plains.
Right,
or
they
swamp.
They notably don't say basic forest, basic plains. So, like, Polluted Delta would say, tap it, sacrifice it, pay one life, go find a swamp or an island. Not basic swamp or basic island. So that's when you say fetch lands, because like Evolving Wilds, Terramorphic Expanse, those are also fetch lands, but that's not what people mean when they say fetch lands.
Yeah.
They mean these fetch lands that nothing comes into play tapped, and they let you go find non-basics of those land types. So
it's notably a big thing the shock lands in Modern are what they get.
Yeah, it's a very big thing in Modern. The lands are sort of one of the barriers to entry as far as price for playing in Modern, because there's a lot of decks where you need quite a few of these fetch lands just to make the deck work. And so if you need 6 to 8, you're looking at an additional $400. And now when some of the when some of these lands have recently gone up to like $80, now you're looking at maybe $600-$700 more you need to build that deck.
Yeah. So which is pretty intense.
That's what's got a lot of people upset, is just they didn't reprint them. They just did the Modern Masters 2015 product, which pushed a lot of people into like investing and getting ready to play Modern, and then they sort of put this roadblock up, quote unquote. I mean, this is what people are saying, where it's hard to get certain lands for certain decks.
Yeah, and the expectation level, I think, was really high coming into this set, both because they were printed here originally and because we got the other ones last year. So people were like, oh my gosh, this, if they're not going to print it, then what are they doing? And I think it was just exacerbated by the fact that now it costs $80 to buy a Scalding Tarn.
And they're saying it's probably going to keep going up, you know, because when's the next time they really could print them? And it's unlikely to be in that block.
Yeah.
It'll probably be in the block after, if it comes.
If it comes standard.
I mean, there's a lot of things to think about here. One is that the clock by which Wizards works under, they're working 2 years out.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't always see the prices and what's going to happen. Like, they're predicting, right?
And that's not necessarily their main concern either. They're trying to make a standard format.
They can't even acknowledge the secondary market. Now, I guarantee they know about it and they do pay attention to it. And we've got indications that they'll reprint certain things to try and bring the prices down because they want people to be able to play the game. And mm-hmm. when their game's too expensive, it really does turn people off from playing it. So they do have to worry about it, even though they can't talk about it. But they're looking so far in the future. Like, right now, they're locking in place cards that are going to be released in 2 years.
Yeah.
There's really, like, if you were asked to do that, would you be able to tell me, like, every single card that and what price points it's going to be at in 2 years? You can't, because you don't even know what decks are going to be good then. So what? It's really hard to tell which cards you're going to have to reprint, you know, that far out. So I think a lot of salt directed at WotC is a little bit misplaced. I mean, they could do a better job at this in some parts. It's just really hard to do.
Yeah, and I think people are also upset because there's not much communication because they can't acknowledge the third market.
Yeah, they can't acknowledge the
secondary market. The third market is, I don't even know what that is.
They can't do it because it puts them in a really weird position where they're sort of printing money. I mean,
they've always been doing that, Josh.
Yeah, but it's artificial supply and demand
is
what they've created here. And so it just gets really hairy legally if they start acknowledging the secondary market. It gets pretty tough.
Yeah, it is really tough just because people want certain things. I mean, do you remember the video last year of the PAX announcement when they announced Fetchlands? People were like
crazy.
It was like the new year. It was as though like a heavenly ray shone through the building and everyone suddenly met their maker and was overjoyed by it. It was amazing how huge the reaction was. And I can see how the opposite of that has led to so many people crying out that now Modern is so inaccessible, especially after Modern Masters coming out. But I will say this, Alex Kessler at the Masters of Modern podcast, he was tweeting out a lot of stuff about this because they talk about Modern. And he tweeted out a list of decks that work without the Zendikar fetches, Tarmogoyf, Snapcaster Mage, or Lilian of the Veil. And there's like 12 decks that work.
There's a lot. You can definitely play Modern. You don't have to have
those
cards. And you can play it and slowly sort of trade and invest into the cards that you want.
The
sky's not falling. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Hopefully these will get a reprint. I mean, from a business standpoint, one of the things I said was, I don't think it made a lot of sense for them to print the fetches right here. They just did that for cons. So if they hold it off for one more set, then they're guaranteed to make that set sell really well. And the fall set traditionally doesn't have a problem.
Yeah, it's the best-selling set usually, right?
Yeah, every year. So they would want to put those fetch lands into a set that maybe normally doesn't sell as much because that's just good business. And we can, you know, we can get all mad and yell at Wizards about some of the stuff they're doing, but actually we want them as a business to thrive because if they're not, then they can't keep making the game.
Yeah, and if they were just like, we're going to reprint all the things all the time, guess what? Your investments, the other cards that you like so much, are all going to go down in price. So it has to be this weird kind of balance. Also, I don't think they want 10 fetches in Standard at the same time.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Especially with Delve as a mechanic, I think it starts overpowering that. I also just think
the time it takes for a match to happen.
Yeah, you're going to shuffle every single turn.
It'll just be annoying to watch.
Yeah, not a fun gameplay
experience. Also, it screws up the color balance because now you can just play five color like the whole time if you want to, I think.
Yeah, that's actually really true.
I mean, I just think there's a million reasons why. I mean, you and I actually never thought that there was going to be fetch lands in Battle for Zendikar. No. I remember having these conversations with people, and they're like, yeah, enemy fetches
have to be reprinted.
And I'm like,
year.
I don't see it. I just don't see how they can do it.
Yeah, and they have full art lands, so people are going to buy the packs and stuff because that's an extra incentive. In a couple of years, each of those lands will be at least $1, and the foil versions will at least be 10 to 15.
That's another really good point from the business angle is, like, you don't need Zendikar fetches and full art lands in the same set because any one of those is going to sell the whole set. So you don't want to overload it to the point, like, you can save the other thing. Mm-hmm. Like, if you did Zendikar fetches here and didn't do full arts, that'd be fine because then you can use the full arts in another set to sell that set.
Yeah.
So just from a business perspective, I mean, this is just how things have to happen. It does sort of stink on one end, but it's understandable.
Yeah, if you're investing into Modern, now is not the best time. It hasn't been the best time. Modern season started already. The prices have already shot up. So getting into the format, you may be a little too late on that front. Fortunately for us EDH players, we don't care.
We don't care. This is actually fine for us. The fetches, I don't know about you guys, but I wasn't necessarily missing them. I have, like I said, I think I have two, and it's like they're in the decks, and I wasn't going to go buy any because they're not good enough to go buy at that price.
Yeah, they don't make
just put
big
a guild gate in for like one hundredth of a price, and it's actually 80% as good. You know, there's no reason to, because we're just not like, oh my god, if I don't play my three drop on turn three, I don't lose. So
maybe you could even gain a life when you put your land into play.
Yeah, exactly. I'll play the refuge lands. I'm not actually, it's better than guild gates because
I play all the tap lands from cons. And every time I see someone play one, I'm like, fist in the air, like, awesome, dude, great, you just saved yourself so much money that you could spend on another card that will make a big difference in the
deck. Exactly. If you spent $50 on a land and then this guy plays the refuge land, the life land, your deck is only 0.005% better than his for that, but you spent $49 more. Whereas he could have taken that $49, bought an Avacyn and an Earthcraft, and now his deck is like,
wow,
look
at that quick math. Holy moly. That was, I was like, that, yeah, 30, oh, yep, that's about it.
So, but, you know, full art lands, I'm actually super excited because you have a lot of them. I don't have very many at all.
I have them because I, like, bought them on Amazon because I was like, I want these full art dollar lands from the original Zendikar or whatever.
You haven't seen Jimmy's decks, a lot of them have, like, all full art lands. He's got foil full art lands.
Look, if I'm going to be casting spells over these mythical planes, I want everyone to feel good when the mana gets tapped for them.
It doesn't make me feel good because I look at my crappy looking, like, Mirage lands and I'm like, what am I doing? I need full art lands. So now I can get them. Very excited about that.
Yeah, and I will probably first pick a foil out land in the draft. I guarantee it. I will first pick one.
You're like, I don't care. Value.
That's like a $10 card. I mean, why not?
It's true. Every pack you buy of this,
and you can play it forever.
I mean, this is going to be a really good set to just buy boxes of because every pack's basically $1 cheaper because those, guaranteed in a year and a half, 2 years, those are worth a buck.
I mean, if you look at the lands from Unhinged, the foil island from Unhinged is $60. That's insane.
That is insane.
But those sets were not printed very much. I mean, like,
it's just hard to get those.
Spikes do not play and buy Unhinged, so they lost a bit of market there. I'm really looking forward to a new unset. I think that'd be really fun.
Oh, I hope that happens. But it'll probably be in place of Conspiracy when it does. So I'm hoping for Conspiracy 2, and then you can do
Unconspiracy 2.0. It's just a combo
it's
of both.
Conspiracy. Uppercase U-N-spiracy.
Oh boy.
Morrow, I hope you're listening. It's okay. That one's free. That one's free. You can take it.
That's like a B+. other exciting news, Commander 2015 info has just started to come out. And again, this is something that they usually talk about at Comic-Con, which would have happened, I guess, like last week normally.
Normally,
it was at the end of July. And so they've started to release some information about this, which is exciting. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, although I'm a little disappointed because it's not four color commanders, which I didn't I was hoping, but I didn't actually think would happen, so.
There's no Nephilim for you, right? Those are the only four color cards right now.
Yeah, and they're not even legendary, so.
It's true, although some people have been talking about playing those as legendary cards for your commander, and we'll have a whole episode on house rules and stuff, especially because we just talked about Unhinged and stuff as well. Cheaty Face occasionally comes into play under my control. But yeah, the MSRP is going to be $35. It's sweet. It's going to be the third commander product printed by Wizards?
Fourth, I think.
Fourth?
Third or fourth?
Fourth, correct.
Fourth, yeah.
Yeah, because there's been two, three, four. Yeah,
yeah.
Last year was
this will be the fourth. It comes out November 13th.
Have you noticed that they've gone one color, then two colors?
So maybe three colors and four colors. Does that mean I have to wait till like 2017?
Yep. And then they do a five color set.
They just skip four, go straight to five?
Oh man, that would be so...
Five would be weird. They'd do five color commanders. Like, it would be hard. The decks would sort of feel the same.
They would all feel the same, yeah. So the enemy colors are going to be represented in this commander set. We're going to have five different decks, I'm assuming. One of them is going to be white-red, white-black, blue-red, blue-green, green-black.
Good job.
Yeah, thank God someone wrote that down in the outline, Josh. I was worried. I saw you, and I was like, what's you? Oh, it's blue. Woo. Dodge the bullet.
There's going to be 55 new cards.
Hopefully we get a total spoil one.
Yeah, I hope we get to spoil one. Each of the decks will have 15 cards, which if you're doing math, that's 75 cards, which means that there will be overlap. So some of the decks will have the same new cards. We know this is a place where they've liked to seed. They've seeded some cards like Containment Priest.
Yeah, that's where they put...
What was the one where the blue card that you name a player and it's got protection from that player?
Oh, True Name Nemesis.
True Name Nemesis. Like, they have put some legacy stuff in there. They've played around with that. They'll definitely play around here. A lot of your Commander staple cards like Chaos Warp are cards that were made specifically for Commander.
Which is, so, I think, great.
Yeah, so 55 new cards. Well, obviously, some of those are going to be...
Some of them will be lands. Like there's the there's a land that gets rid of Shroud and Hexproof that was printed in a lot of the decks last year. That land's great. Arcane Lighthouse, I believe.
Yep.
55 new cards, and they're also going to be you'll be able to draft a lot of the legendary creatures from the set on Modo. They have like a legendary cube that they have coming out.
Oh yeah, that's an interesting thing they're doing.
Because usually they
which
sell
is a cube that's
20.
All legendary cards, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think they'll probably have
or all
have
the creatures are
some.
Legendary. Or
yeah,
something?
Legendary sorcery.
They have, don't they have? Oh no. Are they epic spells? Those are the legendary sorceries,
so.
I guess.
Well, usually they sell the commander products on the store at Wizards, but because you know exactly what's in them, they, I guess, have miserable sales of them. So I think what they're doing is we'll have cool legendary creatures in all of these color pairings, and then we're going to be able to have them draftable. So that's how you can buy
on
a
Modo.
Booster pack on Modo, yeah.
That's cool. Well, let's talk about, speaking of legendary creatures, that's the one of the biggest things when commander product comes out, is we get a whole bunch of new creatures that can be commanders. And this year, they very slyly, they purposely put in this like wording into the description. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, it says, experience counters will make your commanders grow in power during the course of each game.
Experience counters on your commanders. This got the minds a-rolling.
Yeah, this is really cool. So Wizards in the past has played with, so they didn't invent the format, if you guys don't know. Sheldon Mennery, a judge, and a bunch of his judge friends came up with it because it was a way to pass time at tournaments. And Wizards, after taking it under their control in terms of printing a set every year, has invented and created new mechanics for the game. So Derevi and Alora are both creatures that have text that say from like the command zone specifically. Yeah, podcast name. So it looks like they're adding something else here.
And
experience
Prosh
counters.
Is another one that talks about he scales with how many times you've played commander tax, basically. So they have played around this idea of commander cards working differently when you're actually playing commander with them.
Which is pretty sweet. This, it looks like this has to do something with that.
Well, yeah. Is it going to be some combination of like the level up cards from like Rise of the Eldrazi and that time period where...
Level up commanders? Oh my god!
I mean, it says experience counters make your commanders grow in power. Is it like each time it goes to the command zone, put a level up counter? Does it the counter stay when it's in?
I'm sure it whatever it is, it has to be a way that you can't abuse it freely, because then Wizards would clearly not design something like if it was like every time it... I don't know. I'm trying to think of a way like that you could abuse it going to the command zone and back to like rack up the counters. I'm sure Doubling Season affects this as well to double those up.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll put in some wording that like stops Doubling Season somehow or make the green one slightly less powerful because of Doubling Season. They clearly know Doubling Season exists and is a problem.
Yeah. I'm interested.
Super interesting. Yeah. Well,
could you imagine like a Kazundu Tusk Caller, like that guy that makes those elephants?
As like a legendary type of creature that just keeps its counters when it goes to the command zone and comes back and then... Could be crazy.
So by the time it like has three counters, it puts out 3/3/3 green.
Yeah, it could be worded so like tap it and put, you know, X 3/3s into play where X is half the number of counters on it.
Round it up.
Yeah, round it up.
Or equal to the number of counters.
Yeah.
On it.
Oh, geez.
And it just costs one green to put out.
And
yes,
every
please,
time,
please.
Every time it enters the battlefield from the command zone, put a counter on it.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's. I feel like that's what it is. It's not when it dies. It has to be when it comes in.
Right.
Just because it's like I've buffed up a little bit. It's sweet. It's brand new design space. They always talk about design space closing in over time. Like, eventually, we're going to have designed everything for Magic, right?
Right.
So Commander is actually expanding it in a really interesting way because we have this idea of a recurring card that you can always play, which
has
never
existed.
Yeah,
there's a whole zone they can play with that they couldn't play with before. Yeah, there was... again, people are interesting on the online, on the Reddits, on Twitter, and you know, there was a lot of skepticism about this. I would say, and I've always said this, which is that Magic is a game that requires the developers and the designers to push the envelope constantly. They have to. They don't have the same ability that video games have to sort of keep current. They can't patch their game.
Right.
They can't, you know, they can't fine-tune, tweak it in the same way. So if they're not constantly looking for new horizons and pushing over, you know, this hill to look and see what's over there and trying stuff that may not work, if they're scared to have cards get banned because they're too powerful, then they're never going to be pushing up against that wall that we need them to push up against, which is where the most interesting stuff happens.
Yeah. And if they didn't do that, we wouldn't have, like, just cooler games. I don't know. I feel like cards like Chaos Warp are ultimately really good for the game, because it's like, look, if you're playing a mono red deck and you can't afford Karn Liberated, then Chaos Warp is a great option for you. It's, I guess, kind of breaks the color wheel or whatever. But at the same time, Commander is the format that needs to have a little bit of flashiness to it with some crazy stuff. Because if Commander doesn't have that, then it kind of loses the shine of the idea of, like, you get to build cool decks doing cool, crazy things.
Right. Stuff that nobody ever thought of.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Just stuff that's not possible in other formats. So this is, like, the Dreamers format for sure.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that last part. I was a little disappointed about the enemy pairings, just because...
I'm excited for their Legendary Commanders, too, because we had some, like... there's some amazing ones from the last monocolored set.
Yeah, there's some really good ones, but monocolor is just so, like, I don't want to play monocolor. I did make a Titania deck,
right?
But in general, that's a turnoff for me. Dual color, I'm not super stoked about. If it was three color, I'd be way more excited. But this does make me excited again, because the commanders sound like they'll be so super interesting.
I'm so ready for there to be a really good Boros commander in this set. That's kind of my hope.
Come on. Put some card draw or mana ramp on it. That
on
breaks
white,
the color
red
pie.
Commander,
I know, but that's the reason that white-red's, like,
just put
so
Mentor
tough.
On the Meek. Mentor of the Meek on a stick.
There you go.
I'll take that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Just give me something that allows me to do something other than just pure aggro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the nice thing is I usually build three-color decks or five-color decks, so it will be interesting to see if I am inspired to make anything that's two-colored, because I think it does make you have to think differently as a deck builder. And
for sure. For sure. I'm sure we'll each make one at least, because it's just going to be new stuff. It's gonna
I had
be
a quest to make a monocolor deck of every color after last year, and like made... one. Well,
I have,
after my mono red deck I already had, but
I have no such quest. The next point we have is the new Mulligan rule.
Ooh, Mulligan.
So this is something that happened a few weeks ago, but if you haven't heard, if you don't follow the Pro Tour,
they announced it a few weeks ago,
and
maybe even a month ago or so.
Yeah, and it actually happened at the Pro Tour a couple weeks ago. And this doesn't really matter for us, but it's something that's interesting. If you haven't heard about it, it's just interesting the space that Wizards is working in now and what they're thinking about the game and how to continually evolve it and continue to make things better. So
it's like them patching the game is what they're
kind of
doing.
This kind of is with this rule. So the new Mulligan rule, assuming you know the old one. Okay, geez, let's just say the old one. Okay, so the old rule, we all know in EDH is different, but this is for competitive Magic. You draw your first seven cards. If you don't like that hand, you shuffle it back into the deck, and then you draw one less card. So you draw six. Mm-hmm. If you don't like that hand, you shuffle it back into the deck, and you draw five. And then you do keep doing that until you have a hand that you want to keep.
Yep.
What they found was there's a huge gap between starting with seven cards and starting with six cards, something like a 20% difference in the win rate if you went from seven cards to six cards. So it's just too big of a gap. You don't want a game that's decided based on that.
And also, it just sucks for coverage when someone just has to mull down to five and can't play Magic, and you just watch someone just sort of walk over the other player, and coverage is just like, oh, well, bummer.
It makes your game seem, it's less of a game, you know, because it seems like luck plays too big of a part. Now, you want luck to play a part, but not a huge part.
Right.
So what they came up with was really interesting. They added to the Mulligan rule, and what they've said is that it's the same as before, but it says any player whose opening hand has fewer cards than his or her starting hand size may scry one. So if you mold a six or more, before you start the game, you get to scry one.
You have to choose to keep that hand first.
Yes.
You can't be like, I draw six,
I scry
one.
Okay, I'll keep it.
Okay, I'll keep it, yeah. But this is, I mean, It's really good. Scrying, by the way, you look at the top card. So you scry the number it is. So you scry and you look at X cards at the top and you decide whether or not you keep it on top or put it on the bottom. So let's say you have a six land or a six card hand that has like one land in it. You just need one more land to do well. And it's a sketchy keep. Normally you would mulligan it away, but with the scry, you get a much better chance of drawing that land by looking at the top card. And if it's not a land, you immediately put it on the bottom. If it is a land, then you go, woohoo, I did it.
Right.
You usually see people do this when they mull down to six anyway. They'll just flip. If they don't like it, they'll just flip and look at the top card and be like, what would it have been?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this actually is a very good improvement to the current rules. Although there has been a little bit of an outcry for constructed compared to limited.
Yeah. There's been a little bit of dissent among the pros. Almost all of them liked it in limited. Some of them didn't like it in constructed. And that's because in constructed, you build your deck in such a way that certain decks, like combo decks, mm-hmm. Or certain decks that need like specific cards, they will benefit more from the scry thing than other decks because they're not just looking for land or not. They're also looking for Jeskai Ascendancy or not. Or if you're a burn deck, is it you know
you don't want a land.
You don't want the land, yeah. So it's
or the new Thopter's deck you want in Soul Artifact and all that kind of stuff.
You can literally just search for it. It lets you look at two more cards rather than one. Yeah.
It's interesting because we don't do anything of the sort in EDH. I mean, we are probably the most relaxed about drawing an opening seven in our play group than anything else. And everyone does it differently, but we say, like, draw a full seven. You can take as many cards out of that and then draw those amount of cards back up to seven. If you don't like that, mull the whole hand, draw to six.
Yeah.
And then do it again and draw back up to six. It's just like, we just want you to have a good starting hand. And also for us, it doesn't matter as much because you have more turns to draw into your wins. And with 40 life, unless someone's really going ham, you can usually survive, weather the storm and sort of stabilize at a good point.
You know, we haven't planned to do this, but it is interesting because we have been asked on a number of occasions about mulligans, mm-hmm. and people want us to do a show about mulligans, and unfortunately, I just don't think it's a full enough topic to do an entire show on, so maybe we can touch on it here.
We mulliganed that idea, unfortunately.
Yeah, but it is an interesting thing, and it seems to be something that crops up in playgroups is how they mulligan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so what Jimmy just described is called partial Paris?
Paris or Parrish? I honestly don't know.
I heard it was Paris. Because it has something to do with maybe the French Commander rules or
the Paris Mulligan, I believe is what it is.
There you go. Yeah. So that's called partial Paris. It's when you take your starting hands and then you selectively mulligan a few of them but keep others. It's similar to Hearthstone and how they handle mulligans. I know some people don't like this because they're worried that other players will just search for a soul ring or, you know, and
sometimes you draw a hand with a soul ring and just ditch six cards and
keep,
and
the,
just
soul
keep
ring.
The soul ring. Yeah.
Which is, again, I think that's okay. It's an interesting thing. You have to feel it out in your play group because I've definitely been in play groups for not necessarily Magic, but for other games where, there is like one person and you like that person, but they are a little sketchy with how they'll deal with the rules. And it can get a little bit annoying. And at some point,
dangerous,
I understand.
Actually, you know, if you let them really sculpt their opening hand in a way that's like, you just did like four full mulls to seven and then...
Yeah, exactly. And you know, here's the thing I would say in that circumstance is that person is always going to look for those little places where they can do it. So if you change your mulligan rules to a certain point, you're still going to have to keep an eye on them. It's best to just have a conversation at some point. Just be like, dude.
Or dudette.
Dudette, why are you trying so hard to, you know, scam everything a little bit?
You know? Stop.
Yeah.
Stop scamming everything.
You think we don't know, we notice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's probably a better tack to take. And really, I mean, I don't know how we do an entire episode about mulligans. I guess mulligan decisions.
Yeah, what kinds of hands to keep. But
it's
always
so,
so
deck
situational.
Dependent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what I want in my opening hands to decide about mulligans. I want mana. You know, usually three. Two's okay.
If
I have some kind of ramp. I usually want three because being mana screwed just is so bad in EDH.
Yeah.
And then I want card draw, when something that's going to draw me some cards.
Mm-hmm. No matter if it's a six drop that draws you cards, I'm still okay with it. Like if I have a hand with Consecrated Sphinx, I'm like, that is going to be fine.
Yeah, because I'm going to be able to get gas at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather have Rhystic Study or something, but
right.
I want something in my opening hand, Phyrexian Arena.
Skull
like,
Clamp.
Yeah, Underworld Connections even. They don't even have to be the best card draw cards ever because I want to be able to move through my deck a little bit and find the pieces and mm-hmm. Anything that's going to draw me an extra card per turn, even if it's just one, is going to be twice as fast.
Yeah, or having a tutor in your hand is also really nice.
And then I figure my deck will even itself out. Because if I built it right, it's going to, you know, under most circumstances, water will find its level. So I just want the leveler, which is card draw, to come along. That's why I'm an advocate of just playing Howling Mines and stuff like that. Even though in more normal constructed formats, you don't want to play those cards because you're down a card.
Yeah.
Everybody else is up a card that first time. But really, in the end, if you build your deck right, then that's going to level you off better than them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you choose when you play it as well.
Yeah. And that's really all I look for. Card draw, little bit of ramp. That's it. I don't actually worry about the rest of the pieces. I mean, I don't know if I do this the most because our play group does it a lot, which is just draw the seven cards. Yeah, fine. That's good enough. Yeah. I don't look for specific things. I'm not trying to like, oh man, I'm going to be able to play this on turn four and hose everybody. That's just not, you know, I don't know. That's just not usually how I think about it.
Yeah, if it's in the hand and it's there. I mean, I won't keep a hand if it's like three lands and then 4 9 drops.
Right.
You know, I'll mulligan away that maybe.
But you'll partial.
Yeah, I'll partial all but one of the 9 drops. She's like, I like this one the most. It's usually Insurrection or whatever. And then I draw an extra 3. And if I'm just, it's like, honestly, if those are all still like 7 8 drops, I'll be like, man, whatever, fine. I still have 3 lands. That's like the most I can ask for.
I'll usually full mull then if I do that. Like if I got a hand with 4 7 to 9 drops and 3 lands, I'll mull all 4 of the big stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what I've got. If there's not a single piece of card draw, mull the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my decks, I always have 10 to 12 card draw things, so I've got a good chance of just getting one. I just want one.
Yeah.
I just want my velocity to be high. Everything else will work.
And it's also the early game. No one usually points removal in our play group at stuff like that in early game.
It's just hard to waste it on one person drawing cards.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't even know if they're your enemy yet. You usually want to save it for something that, like, for the moment when somebody says, I attack you, Jimmy. Okay, I'll use my removal. Like, you don't really want to waste it until then.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in our next episode, actually, specifically how to hold some cards back. Another thing I wanted to mention on the current topics is if you guys use Twitch at all, you should. Twitch is great. Tons of really cool stuff on Twitch. Magic streaming is, like, at an all-time high. There is, like, a giant group of people that are all online and playing, and they're all great. They all do different formats. They all play different things.
Mm-hmm.
There are even some people that stream Commander stuff, although I find that kind of
it's tough.
I fall asleep when I watch that.
It's tough, yeah.
Which sucks because I love Commander and stuff, but you know, if you're watching on the phone, there's like 3 other giant screens, and you have to like zoom into each one and be like, what is on?
It's really hard to keep track of the board state. The politics of it are really hard. They don't really transfer all that great.
They don't transfer at all. And if there was a live group playing it, that would be what would be most interesting.
Then it'd be super interesting. You'd need multi-camera setup so you can see what everybody's doing, but then it would be like literally people like trying to politic would be interesting, but you have to produce that to such a high level.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, right now we have awesome people online. Wedge from the Mana Source has just started the stream. There's Kenji Egashira, there's MTG Doc, Paul Cheon, Gabby Spartz, Ashlyn Rose. Marshall Sutcliffe will sometimes just pop on the stream at like 3 a.m.
It's super late every time he does it. The guy is like a big time night owl.
He sits there, he's like leaning back in his chair using his professional microphone so it sounds great.
Well, and he's got that deep, awesome voice.
Yeah, exactly.
He sounds the best of any of the streamers.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because both the mic and everything else. Loading Ready Run, those guys are drafting as well. And they also do these things called the streamer drafts, streamer showdowns. It happens like once a month where they just pit 8 different of the streamers and usually one Wizards employee, and you can watch multiple streams at once and see who's drafting what and passing what to the person on the left or right. It's really cool. It's like interactive. You get to see like, oh wow, because this person didn't pick it, that guy grabbed it or that girl grabbed it, and that's why they're in green, etc. So you get to like sort of monitor the draft as it goes. And also, if you are interested in those formats, all of these players usually talk about their reasoning behind the way they play. Why they chose a certain card, why they're playing it now, why they're holding it back. And I think that's actually really, really important.
Yeah, it's akin to like listening to a podcast about how to improve your play.
Yeah.
You can watch somebody play, and as they talk about how they're playing and why they're making decisions, that can improve your play.
And you can ask them live, like, hey, why did you just do that? Or like, shouldn't we have played Titanic Growth there? And they'll go, no, because this, this, this. And whoa, cool. And that almost all that knowledge can apply to EDH.
Yeah, you can definitely apply the information and the way they think about stuff to the EDH games. In a lot of ways, EDH is more complicated because there's so many other players.
And politics.
Yeah, and because of politics, there's not as many, like, this is the correct thing. Whereas in, like, limited and constructed competitive formats, there's often a exactly right play.
Right, but I do like EDH the idea that if they're trying to enforce the idea that you should be making the correct play.
You should make it be... you should be making your plays for a reason.
Yeah, for a reason.
And they have, you know, I thought of X, Y, and Z, and that's why I did this. And even if you're not right, just going through the process, you'll be right more often if you have a process.
Yeah, instead of just sort of going willy-nilly and doing whatever.
The other good thing is that Jimmy and I have a tendency to be hanging out in a lot of these chats, especially Kenji, Doc, Wedge, those are some of our favorites, will often be in there. So you can always pop in, and if you see us, say hi, and
Yeah, I've actually talked to a lot of listeners already.
Yeah.
So if you guys are listening, hello, friends. That's Kenji's way of saying hello. Hello. And let's see, what does Doc say? Doc is a... Oh, gosh. I was doing Doc impressions when I guessed it on his charity stream the other day, and now I can't think of what he says. He was a... it's like he'll go like, Kyle 569, thank you for subscribing. A beer, or I raise a toast in the Boros fist to you. It's
He has like his whole like routine he goes through every time that somebody subscribes. So
speaking of Boros, hope they print that Boros commander. Come on, guys, I'm looking forward to it. Just gonna keep referencing Boros because
I don't care at all, because it'll have to be amazing for me to build a
it
Boros
would have
deck.
To be amazing.
Yeah,
right?
Just
yeah.
Show them not Boros.
No, just it doesn't work. It doesn't work as well as you want it to. All right. Let's go on to some stuff that we found on Reddit and Twitter.
Yeah, so we may do this from time to time. Also, we thought there were some interesting discussions that have been going on Reddit and Twitter, and we'd bring them here and just discuss them. Mm-hmm. Something I noticed on Twitter, and I think, or on Reddit, and I think a Twitter follower pointed us towards it, was a discussion going on Reddit about somebody asking, like, why is Sol Ring legal in EDH? They went on to compare it to the Moxen and things like Mana Crypt. And obviously
they're actually more powerful than the Moxen, we think.
I think it's at least equal to the Moxen. And the Moxes are all banned. So why the heck is Sol Ring legal? You know, and a lot of debate occurred. It was a very big, you know, it was a big string. People on all sides.
There are rules for Commander. I think they're French Commander rules that ban Sol Ring and a bunch of other cards.
Dual Commander, basically 1-on-1.
Dual Commander, yeah. I would agree with that. I think it is very powerful for 1v1, because if you just draw Sol Ring and your opponent doesn't, and you're playing 1v1, you're in a pretty good chance.
You're going to win that a huge percentage higher of the time, because that one card puts you two turns ahead.
Yeah, you can play, and you can play all number of things that can keep accelerating you, as is typical in the Commander game, whereas your opponent's always going to be just a step behind, and you can always be on the beatdown.
Yeah, it's very difficult to catch up if somebody turn one Sol Ring in a 1v1 match.
However,
we play a multiplayer format, so that does dilute the power level of Sol Ring, because if you're two turns ahead of everybody, that means if they all team up on you, they're equivalent or slightly greater, depending on how many players there are.
Yeah, and there's a lot more ways to equalize. There's a lot more just mass artifact hate, enchantment hate, and stuff that will get rid of the things that's putting you so far ahead. And whenever you paint a target on yourself, I mean, unless you are like set up so perfectly to fend off three different people at the same time, it's going to be hard to leverage a Sol Ring into an unbeatable position that is suppressive and oppressive for the rest of the playgroup, I think.
It is very powerful. If you turn around Sol Ring, you're in a very strong position.
Yeah.
You have a better chance to win that game than anybody at that moment. That doesn't mean your chance to win the game is now 80%, even though you're against three other players.
I'm actually more of a proponent of not a turn one Sol Ring if you can't use it to its max.
If you can't use it on turn two, I wouldn't do it, because it just paints a target for no reason. But if you have a 4-drop or a 3-drop, then you play it, because that allows you to do those things on turn two. I really think this is a different issue, though, because to me, Sol Ring could be banned. You could totally ban it for
this
the reason
like Mana Crypt, right?
Yeah, and I think the case for Mana Crypt being banned is actually pretty good. And if I was on the rules committee, I think I would ban Mana Crypt, or I wouldn't ban Sol Ring. The couple of reasons I have: one is we've talked to Sheldon; he's been on our show. One of the things he said and really resonated with me was the ban list. If it gets too large, the format is really in danger.
Yeah, it'll collapse on itself, kind of.
Yeah, because if it ever gets to a point where a new player just can't really keep the entire ban list in their head at all times, then it's too confusing, and the whole format can possibly die because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ban list itself is oppressive, because you have to remember like so many cards that you're not allowed to play. So there is a need to keep the ban list small. So basically, unless you absolutely have to, you should not ban a card, because you really need to keep that ban list as small as possible. So that's point number one. Point number two is Sol Ring is playable in every deck. So it's not like it costs one green.
Right. It's not like Primeval Titan where it's like, I'm the best Titan and only green gets me.
Exactly. So then if you're a really, really, really good card, it's forcing people to play a certain color. Sol Ring's not doing that. Yeah. So every deck can just put it in there. It's not on the reserve list. They can reprint it. As a result, they have, and it's not very expensive, so everybody can attain it. And I think that's actually the reason the Moxes are banned, because they're similar in power level to the Sol Ring. Also, there's five of them, so in a five-color deck, they'd be broken. But the main issue, I believe, is that they're just so few of them in existence.
Yeah, it's like $1,000 each for one, $800 to $1,000.
Exactly. So if somebody has them and you don't, it feels horrible because you can just never get that card. It's not like a $50 card where you're like, wow, that's a sweet card. I could trade a bunch of stuff and maybe get one.
Yeah, imagine if a player had three Sol Rings in their deck as opposed to one.
Yeah.
That would be really poopy.
And the other two, literally, you can't get them in your deck also unless you give $2,000.
Yeah.
But what I think that would actually lead to is proxies. Mm-hmm. So it, because they would
and
be...
And that kills the format, I think, too, just as quickly as a big ban list.
Well, A... if you have staple cards that have to be in every deck because they're that powerful, they're Sol Ring level powerful cards, and everyone's proxying them, what happens? What's the domino effect of that? I believe the domino effect of that is you have a format that's now based on proxies, and Wizards can't promote that. They can't. They're not going to give you product support. They're not going to release Commander 2015 product for a format that's built on the back of proxying, because that's not something they can encourage.
Ever,
Yeah, they can't. I mean, that's just bad for their business. So there's a big snowball effect that sort of occurs there. I believe Sol Ring is, you know, yes, there are issues with it. It's fine, though. It evens out over time. It feels bad in certain instances where somebody gets it out turn one and does broken things fast and you'd feel like you can't do anything. We just have to give that. We have to be willing to say, well, that's an anomaly. Most of the time, it's fine. But Mana Crypt, I do believe, is starting to fall under because the price is getting so high and the power level's right there.
It costs zero mana is the big one, and the life loss from it is negligible.
I actually believe the price tag on it is what does it.
Yeah.
If it was a $2 card that did the same thing, at least everybody can have it in their deck.
God, I wish it was.
you have one. I don't.
I do have one, yeah. I manned up and bought a Portuguese one because it was cheaper.
That's a really good tip. Go buy the foreign one, not the expensive foils. There's certain languages that are more expensive than English, but there are other ones that are less expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Italian.
Yeah. I want them to do more book promos. Come on, guys. Print a book and give me a Mana Crypt in it. That would have been a pretty sweet book to buy if you were a kid. I would have bought so many if I knew. If only I knew,
I would have a stack of those books somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Although just going to the same pile as all my Goosebumps books. Oh, yeah. Also, people are like, so if the Zendikar fetch lands aren't going to be in Battle for Zendikar, where are they going to be? Could they possibly be in Commander 2015?
This is a big thing that I am surprised by. And Wedge from the Mana Source is even predicting that they're going to be in the Commander 2015 product. He came out and said, and there's a lot of argument.
Can you imagine a modern player being like, I have to buy that now to get my fetch land?
Well, I don't think a modern player would have to. They would just be like, oh, I have to trade with a commander player for that stuff.
Yeah, and the price will go down as soon as it's printed, if they print it in commander.
It feels unlikely to me. If I were a betting man, and I am, well documented, I am a betting man, I would say probably not. It just doesn't feel like a great place for them to do it. Those cards are worthy of selling an entire set. Commander product is not on the level of a Khans of Tarkir release, a Theros release, a Return to Ravnica release. That's what we're talking about here. So,
yeah, Commander 2015 is supplementary.
Yeah.
It supplements the main selling force, which is Wizards wants to sell cards into Standard.
Yep. And also, Commander players will not be as excited about those fetch lands.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not going to help you sell the product to the demographic that it's for. So, but then there's the counter argument, which is like, but then all of a sudden, you're going to sell that product to a bunch of people that normally wouldn't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is upside. Listen, it could happen. I put the percentage chance as very low, though, of it being in the Commander 2015 product.
Yeah, and if you're a Commander player, just don't worry about it. The other fetch lands that are way cheaper, if you really need to fetch, can do the job.
Terramorphic Expanse is fine for us. Evolving Wilds is fine for us. You don't even need the fancy fetches. I mean, they're great. Don't get me wrong. If you have them and they're from cons and they're cheap now, you should get them. But we don't need Scalding Tarn and such.
Nope. Not necessary. Don't even need it. Don't want it. Get it away from me. Ah, Burns. Get it away.
You don't want it?
Well, okay, I want it.
I mean, like, if somebody was like, hey, you want the Scalding Tarn, Junior?
I'd be like,
get that away from me.
Get that away from me. Well, actually, speaking of useless uselessness and just wasting a card, Alex Kessler was down a fork in real life, so he used an actual fork to eat his food.
A fork card.
Yeah, the card fork. Kessler, come on, man. That card's great. Josh has killed me like 3 to 4 times with fork. Guaranteed.
Did he actually, was that actually a picture he actually took, or did he find it somewhere?
I think it was. I mean, I don't know. It says Kess Wiley got hungry but couldn't find a fork. Hashtag hangry. Hashtag Indian food. Hashtag puns. And it's just this fork.
Fork the
half.
Card.
The card, yeah. The one that doubles any spell, instant or sorcery for 2 red. And it's just got curry on it, and it's in a bowl of rice.
It's got tikka masala all over it.
Tikka masala, yeah. I mean, I love tikka masala. I love Indian food. I do not love this.
I just don't know where that fork's been. I couldn't eat off it.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, outside of the fact that, A, it's a piece of cardboard, it's been handled by tons of people. It's passed through many hands.
I didn't realize that this was such a big issue for you.
I don't know. I can't imagine myself. I mean, I would do it with a basic land, sure.
Well, yeah.
But this is a card.
No,
that
actually, I wouldn't. I would just ask for another utensil that's
actually
for eating.
6 people favorited this tweet, guys.
Who are you?
I will read out their names.
I might be one of them.
Oh, my gosh.
Am I one of them?
6, 8, and you're not.
Okay, good.
Andrew Skoglund. I know you listen to our podcast, Anders. John Waters. Maybe you do, too. Kenny Hall.
He does.
Andrew Mullen.
I don't know.
And Josh Alexander.
Actually, I think all of those people listen to our show.
Yeah.
Are you disappointed in them, Jimmy?
I'm not disappointed. I mean, I'm sure they were like, you can favorite for any number of reasons, right? You can be like, oh, it was funny. Or, oh, that's, I want to remember this later, so I'm going to add it to my favorites. Only one person retweeted it, though, and I think it was Alex himself. So good on you for not spreading it. At least you guys just favorited it and you didn't retweet. Retweet's the important one. If you guys retweeted it, I'd be up in arms.
You know, people are salty about not getting Zendikar fetch lands in Battle for Zendikar, but not Jimmy Wong. He's salty because Alex wasted a magic card.
A magic card, yeah. Come on. Think about that little kid somewhere that's like, you can double any instant or sorcery.
Is that little kid somewhere?
He is.
A hypothetical little kid. I don't know if he exists.
It's probably just me, actually.
It's the little kid inside of you.
Yeah, I don't have any forks now that I think about it.
You don't have one?
I don't think
That's why.
Oh, my gosh.
That's why. Lay down on my couch. We will have a discussion.
I need a fork.
How does that make you feel, Jimmy?
Very upset. My feelings have been hurt.
All right. Well, that was a fun tangent.
Yeah. Well, that wraps up our episode on the current subject. What's current? What's happening in the world of Magic?
Yeah. Let us know if you like this format and us sort of tackling issues like this. You know, something we probably would like to do not all the time, because there's not always a lot of issues, but as they sort of start to pile up at certain times of the year, mm-hmm. you know, something we'd think about doing more shows like this.
Yeah. And also, if we're still going to keep to our 2-show-a-week schedule, it'll be nice to occasionally not have to do so much Commander stuff, because, you know, we might run out of Commander stuff to talk about at some point if we're not careful. It's impossible.
Not that that's happening, but
we have a billion deck doctors we could just do instead.
All right, now that we've worried everyone listening, on to the instep.
Guys, we're burning out.
All right, I have an instep.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, this is where we talk about something cool outside of the world of Magic.
And I'm surprised you actually have one, because I'm like, crap, we're going to record another episode after this.
You got to think of it. You have a whole other episode with which to think of it. Mine is books.
Books?
I'm going on this long trip. I talked about it last week.
That's right.
I need book recommendations because I'm going to be, there's long flights involved. There's going to be a cruise for part of the trip.
You definitely need some books.
So I need some books, and I need recommendations from everybody out there of awesome books. I only want awesome books, okay? Because I don't want to read anything that you're like, yeah, it's pretty good. I just want you to give me some book recommendations on Twitter, at Josh Lee Kwai, or you can email them to us at commandcast@rocketjump.com.
Yeah.
Just let me know any like awesome A+ books that you've read, because I'm going to need a stack of them. That's it.
Yep.
That's my
big stack. And it can be digital books as well, right? You can read them on your iPad.
I prefer them, actually, because I can't carry like 30 books with me on the trip. It'll just be a whole suitcase.
That's right.
So it's going to be easier on the iPad.
What are you looking forward to most in your trip? Is there any area or place?
The food in Singapore.
Yeah, that's
I hear it's the
right.
best place for food in the world.
Really?
That's what a lot of people say.
Singapore is also the cleanest country, like by far. they have very strict laws, if you guys didn't know, about everything. Like, if you spit gum on the street, you're going to jail.
Yeah, if I if I don't come back, Jimmy, then will you come to Singapore and bail me out somehow?
I guess, and I'll be like, what did you... Did you litter, Josh?
Did you spit gum?
Oh, my gosh.
If I'm not even going to chew gum while I'm there.
Yeah, so I think what they actually do is they confiscate the gum from you on the plane.
So that you can't accidentally...
So you can't accidentally spit it out, yeah. If you walk around L.A., there's little black splotches everywhere on the ground. I'm positive almost all of that is tar or gum. That's just been there for
LA doesn't
years.
Arrest you for breaking any of the laws that exactly. are actually make sense either. So, yeah. All right.
That's exciting. Well, I hope you have a great time in Singapore, Josh.
Thank you.
I only went once as a child, and I don't remember the food, so.
I'll let you know. I'll hopefully be able to tweet out a bunch of pictures.
Yes. That'd be great.
Probably for those 3 weeks, my Twitter feed will stop being about magic and will mostly be about food and like cool architecture and maybe... more food.
I bet you'll find some magic out there, especially in
Singapore has a pretty big magic scene.
Yeah.
And Korea has a big StarCraft scene.
Korea has a big magic scene as well. And Korean cards are like one of the higher.
Oh, yeah, because Korean lettering looks sweet.
Yeah, lots of circles.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe my most excited thing I am actually. I'm going to change it. Sorry, Singapore.
That was a good sentence. The most excited thing you am.
I'm a podcaster, man. My sentences are impeccable.
Yeah, there you go.
So Singapore just got bumped to number two. Sorry. Number one is visiting the DMZ on the South Korean-North Korean border.
Oh, man.
The most militarized area in the world.
Yeah. The craziest place in the world.
I am fascinated by North Korea.
Yeah.
I'm completely fascinated. If there's a documentary, in fact, if you read a book about it, please, that's at the top of my list.
Yeah, there's a book about the DMZ that Josh can read. I almost like said DMV for a second. It's like, man, that is the worst
place. Why are you excited
place.
About that, Josh?
It's also just like at the North Korean, South Korean border, there's a DMV there. It's like, that is the actual embodiment of hell.
No wonder they don't like each other.
There's like a black hole emanating from that place that sucks both countries to like have a war on that border, I guess. That's pretty intense. Yeah, DMZ, that's awesome. Matt Arnold went there. He was on the podcast once.
That's why I'm going, because he raved about it. So
yeah, pretty intense. Cool. All right.
Make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex and Ben talk about modern.
Yeah, and there's lots to talk about now, especially with these crazy sets coming out.
Oh, they're going to talk a lot about this whole Zendikar Fetchland thing, I'm sure. They talk about all things competitive magic. You can find them on rocketjump.com right next to us under the podcast tab. You can also find them on Twitter at the MMcast.
If you guys want to follow our editor, Eli Cuevas, big ups to you, man. You can find him on Twitter at TVGA.
Yeah, Eli.
And you can also find the guy that does all of the animations on the videos for us, Jeffrey Palmer at Living Cards MTG. And make sure you guys check those videos out there at youtube.com/The Command Zone Podcast. We post a video for every episode, and it's another cool way to consume the content in case you haven't been watching it.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.